Okay, today is Friday, July 13th, 2012. This is Steve LaBruta, a graduate student at the University of Texas at Austin, H.J. Letcher Stark Center for Physical Culture and Sports, and as part of the 68 Olympic Oral History Project, I'm interviewing Susie Atwood over the phone about her experiences in the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City. So, Susie, first of all, where are we talking to you today?
I am in my State Farm agency in Long Beach, California.
Right.
And I just had a meeting with my team and just was getting back to my desk and you called.
Excellent. Well,
you were right on time.
Timing is everything.
Mm-hmm.
How about, what are your recollections when, how did you get into athletics and how did the whole 1968 Olympics start with you? How did you get into athletics?
Well, my father, who attended University of Southern California, he and his college buddies, along with their wives, all went to a pool party at one of his friends' house,
mm-hmm.
and they brought their families,
mm-hmm.
and during the course of the party, one of the little boys there, I guess adult supervision was not as great as it should have been, and he almost drowned. The paramedics had to be called to revive him.
Oh, gosh.
So, based on that, my parents, who had never learned to swim at the time, took my brother and I to the local Lakewood YMCA,
mm-hmm.
for a learn-to-swim program.
Mm-hmm.
And that really was instrumental in getting me into swimming. And ironically, the teacher at the YMCA, it was called the Tiny Tots program. He, after teaching some lessons, he decided he would like to start a swim team. And he did. And of course, he was recruiting everybody. Just he needed sheer numbers, I think, in order to make the thing work. And after taking some swim lessons, I thought it would be fun to be on the swim team.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, I was no swimmer, but I did have an alternative motive. I figured if I swam more, then I could get out of ballet class. And a ballerina, I would never have been, I don't think, too successful. So, anyway, I kept swimming and I kept improving, but that essentially, and actually the guy who taught me how to swim was the coach. His name is Jim Montrella, M-O-N-T-R-E-L-L-A, that I swam with all the way through to Olympics.
Wow. And how old were you when you first started?
I was almost seven.
Almost
and my
seven.
Brother was, I think, five, and my folks learned to swim as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's excellent. Okay, so the coach actually took you all the way through both Olympics. Did you enjoy what you were doing?
You mean my swimming career or learning to swim? I wasn't sure what you were pertaining to.
Both and either. These are just...
Okay.
What are your recollections?
Well, I do remember... initially, I enjoyed being in the water. I remember probably I was three or four, and my parents would try and get me to jump into a pool or just get wet. And again, I hadn't had swimming lessons, but I never wanted to get in the water. And my mother finally figured out that I didn't want to get my bathing suit wet. So she took my bathing suit off, and then I would go in. I mean, just with her holding me and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So when I finally learned, I did like to be in the water. I thought it was fun. And I think for me initially, I liked the other kids on the team. And so it became probably a little bit social and fun. But then when I started going to swim meets, you know, when I was seven or so, mm-hmm. I didn't like losing. And I was... pretty bad. And I remember going to my first swim meet. I have vague recollections, but my coach always talked about it. He put me in the 80-yard individual medley. So that's butterfly, backstroke, breaststroke, freestyle. I don't know if you have a swimming background or not, so that's why I'm... Do you have a swimming background? Or?
Yes, ma'am. Actually, I was on a swim team.
Oh, okay.
I was quite young myself.
Okay, all right. But so I didn't mean to...
No, not at all.
Yeah. So he put me in the 80 individual medley. Well, I don't think I'd ever done butterfly, and I got disqualified. And my coach said, the referee made a comment like, I don't know what she's doing, but there she goes. I think I learned very quickly that I did not want to lose. Mm-hmm. I, wanted to be the best. I wanted to at least show a lot of improvement, and I was competitive.
Wow.
And so I think that was something that I learned at an early age.
Do you think your parents were supportive of your competitive spirit? It sounds like you came from an athletic background. So
my dad played football and college.
Mm-hmm.
He played football and basketball some in college, and he was in the Army Air Force, so he was a little bit athletic. And then my mother, I think, was probably more the coordinated one, and she was a cheerleader and actually seemed to take to the water very well, and was really. Had always had a nice stroke and a good feel for the water when it came to swimming. So they were, I can't say they were super jocks by any means, but they were certainly supportive of me and my swimming endeavors. And in retrospect, I think that I saw a lot of crazy swimming parents. And I was always thankful that my parents were supportive without being over the top
mm-hmm.
about it. So, yeah, they were supportive of, I think, any endeavor my brother or I would have chosen to go into.
Was your brother in athletics as well, or did he have other pursuits?
He swam a little bit,
mm-hmm.
But not too much, but he was always into sailing. He's done the Transpac, which is the sailboat race from here to Hawaii, like 30 some times.
Wow.
And so he's done it a lot. And so he's always been very successful at sailing. And my uncle was a world champion sailor as well out of the San Diego area.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as swimming, no, I was the only one.
Well, that's great. As you look back, when did you start realizing that you were going to get pretty good at this?
Well, it's funny. I by the time I was like almost nine, so I was in the 7 to 8 year old division back then. I broke a Southern California record, which Southern California swimmers were pretty good. And then I remember it was my last meet before I turned nine, and I was really shooting to break the national record. And I didn't. And I was just so disappointed. I mean, and it was my last meet before I turned nine, so chances are I'm not going to break the 9 and 10 year old record if I can't break the 7 and 8 year old record. So And I remember my coach was saying, well, you can't expect to improve all the time. You've been training hard, and, you just didn't have it today, but don't get discouraged. And I just remember that thinking, God, it just bothered me. And I mean, and looking back, here I am 8 years old, and I'm devastated that I didn't break the national record in the 50-meter breaststroke at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I never broke a national record till I was 14. So.
Oh goodness, that's just.
Yeah, so I just never did, and then at 15 I made the Olympics. So.
Yeah, absolutely. What was your you spoke about training. What at this time? I mean, you started off pretty young, as a lot of swimmers do. Mm-hmm. What was your training regimen at this time? What did your life look like?
Yeah, well, until I was probably almost 12 or close to 12, I did one practice a day in the afternoon, and we usually had a practice on the weekend as well. So it could be, you know, 5 to 7 days a week. And then when I was 11 or 12, we started the two-a-day workout or so all the time. And so then my life looked like getting up at 5:30 and going to practice from 5:45 to 8 every morning, and most of the time on the weekends as well, and then afternoon practice from, you know, 5 to 7, 5 to 8, for, you know, whatever time, whatever pool we could happen to get it at that moment, because we didn't always have a set practice facility. We had to share it with the city schedules. So that was pretty much it. But, I mean, I think I could pretty safely say, you know, we're going anywhere from, 8 to 10 miles a day, 6 to 7 days a week.
Yeah, that's a pretty, pretty interesting training.
Intense, for yeah. Yeah.
So you said you didn't break any records until
national records until I was 14.
Right, so that's a year before the Olympic trials, right?
Yeah, and again, those were, you know, 13-14. That was a 13-14 record. I finally broke the national record, and then I made the Olympics as a long shot at 15. I had finaled in the nationals, I think, one other time prior to the Olympic trials in 1968, and I remember doing my best time in the morning of the Olympic trials by a second, and I believe I qualified 6th in the 200-meter backstroke, and top 2 made the team for sure. Top 3 might go depending on the number of doubles and other events. And I took like 4 to 5 seconds off my best time and got second.
Wow. That's pretty good improvement.
Yeah. And I remember just being like, oh my God, I was just shocked.
Describe the Olympic trials for me. Were there any problems or challenges for you? I mean, obviously it ended up pretty good.
Well, I think that, my coach had sort of convinced me that he said if you can go, at the time, he said if you can go a 224 for your 200-meter backstroke, he goes, I think that's going to make the team. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a pretty sure bet. So we kind of trained with that time in mind. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I never believed that I could go 224. And so when I got to the trials, it's not like there was a lot of pressure from other people to think that I could make the team, because, like I said, no one would have expected that. I think I always put a lot of pressure on myself, and I put a certain amount of belief in my coach that possibly I could, make it. But, again, I don't know if I fully believed it till I hit the wall. And then, ironically, it was... the trials were in Los Angeles that year, 1968,
yeah,
for the women. And so my family was there, and all my teammates, and everybody was there. And so when I finished, no one could believe it. It was crazy.
How long after the trials did you find out that you had made the team?
Well, I mean, you knew really right then because of the timing devices. And... I know you couldn't. I don't think there was. I can't remember if there was a board or not that showed it. But I mean, I knew right then because it wasn't. It was pretty clear cut. It was first was 224 something. I think I went around 225, and then third was I think another second beyond. So, you know, it was, you didn't need a photo finish, so you knew. And I think my coach was down there on the deck.
Yeah.
And then you could see everybody going, cheering.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Well, you were kind of the hometown girl at the trials. That's...
Yeah. It was really exciting.
That is. How did everyone react? How did your family react or your teammates?
Shocked. Everybody was shocked. I was shocked. But anyway, I mean, everybody was super excited for me, and I was just in awe of making it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, those were people that I'd read about, and just felt like that my Olympic dreams were, I didn't truly believe that they were attainable.
Mm-hmm.
And but they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just yeah.
Okay, now that you've made the team, what kind of training did your training change in any way or anything else as you're getting prepared to go to Mexico City?
Well, it did change because we had approximately a six or seven week training camp in Colorado Springs at the Air Force Academy.
Yeah.
And so that was the first time that I had not trained with my team, my own personal team from Lakewood. And now you're training with all the best female swimmers in the nation, if not in the world.
Uh-huh.
And so different coaching styles, just different things, which I personally, you know, was a good perspective to put, just to experience a different environment, different techniques and things. So I was at the Air Force Academy for 6 weeks. Then we went to Mexico City, and my event was the very last day of the entire game. So I've been away from home, I don't know, 2+ months. Like I said, I'd never really been away from home before for more than, you know, 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And honestly, by the time I got to the, and endured 3 weeks in Mexico City and 6 weeks in Colorado Springs, I was pretty ready to go home. I mean, I loved it. I was in awe of everybody there and being in the Olympic Village, but it was just a long haul for me, and I didn't do that great. I came in ninth. I just missed making the finals.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do a very good time. Had I just been close, I should have made the finals. But honestly, I can't say that it was a huge disappointment. My goal had been to make the Olympic team, and I was just happy to be a part of that experience. And you know, figured I'll revamp after this, and I'll decide if I want to try for another 4 years or what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So that was...
Did you enjoy the training camp at the Air Force Academy? Did you bond with team members, things like that?
I did. I had everybody had a roommate. I roomed with a girl by the name of Vicky King, who was a distance freestyler, and she was, I think, 15 or 16, but a lot of those girls had bonded before on prior national team trips, and everybody was really, really nice and friendly. But I still think when you're 15 versus bonding with someone that's 19 or 20, it may be a little bit, you're not as close.
Sure.
But it was, everybody was just really nice, and I enjoyed just being a part of that whole experience.
Okay. What about, so you went directly from Colorado Springs to Mexico City. Was there any concern for the altitude or anything else in any of your training? Do you remember?
Well, there was, and that's why they put us at the Air Force Academy, because I think it's been around, and again, if you know exactly what it is, I mean, it's somewhere around 7,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we trained there.
Right.
And to try and get adjusted to, you know, the altitude.
Sure.
So, I mean, mean, and I definitely would say that at least initially you could certainly feel the difference in the altitude, and I don't really attribute that to why I didn't swim that well. I think it was just a long haul and mm-hmm. being away and around my family or friends or teammates, or being out of my normal environment was a lot for me to handle at that age.
Oh, absolutely, and I can definitely see that. What are your recollections of getting on the plane and going to Mexico City? Your impressions of going to Mexico City, and what kind of atmosphere do you remember?
I remember it very upbeat, and just still being in awe of being there. I still hadn't sunk in even after the training camp.
Mm-hmm.
I truly didn't feel like I deserved to be there, but I was. But I was upbeat, as was the team. There was a lot of excitement. There was a lot of, I'd say, good connections between people and teammates, and just an overall optimistic, positive view. But there was, I remember, some concern over altitude and just the games being in Mexico City. And I remember right not too long before we got there, there was the massacre.
Mm-hmm.
That was there, and I think that was a couple weeks prior to us arriving.
Yes.
But and I think there was also some concerns, I remember, about how the traffic would be.
Absolutely. Touching on the massacre at the time, did you hear about it? Were you guys given a briefing or anything, or were your parents really concerned about it, or?
No, my parents didn't seem to be too concerned about it, but I don't remember a briefing by the team, but I do remember, and there may have been, but I do remember hearing it from different athletes and some folks that I knew that were visiting there, and they talked about the government massacre of students, protesters and bystanders, and at the time I thought it was, I was saddened by it, but at the same time, it really didn't faze me that we would ever be in any kind of danger.
Mm-hmm.
At that age, you're a little bit invincible, and you just don't think about, you just don't think in any sort of negative way about that kind of thing.
Sure, and you were obviously you felt like you were in a pretty safe environment with the security and the personnel around, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So,
when you got there, tell me a little bit about your accommodations and what your impressions were, where you were staying in the Olympic Village, or.
I remember there was a lot of beds in one room. It was kind of like I don't know. There must have been 12. People or so in our room. So it was just, now there were some kind of adjacent bedrooms where you could have two in a room. You just kind of ended up in the main hall there. So there was just masses of beds everywhere. And then you kind of kept your stuff right with you. And it certainly wasn't the Ritz-Carlton, but it was fine with me at the time. I think now, looking back, I would certainly feel like I would want privacy and have downtime alone without people coming in and out. But at that age, I didn't know to think any differently, as opposed to 72 when we all the females had their own room. Which, was a whole different set of, very different.
Absolutely, absolutely. Do you remember what the food was like? I mean, heck, you were there before. I mean, you were the last event, so you had a lot of time to get acclimated with the village and continue your training, I guess. And then, what about the food and the dining facilities?
I think at that point, I was of the, you know, I basically ate everything in sight, and it really wouldn't matter what it tasted like. Anything and everything. So for me, the fact that there was lots of it, okay, that sounds good. I think I've heard it mentioned that the food wasn't that great, but I can't say that I got sick or was a bit bothered by it. Mm-hmm. I know when I got back, people said, "Did you get sick down there?" Mm-hmm. No, I could blame it on being sick. I could blame it on altitude, but I really don't think that had anything to do with it. I just swim that well. I just was away too long for a first
oh, yeah.
trip.
Well, it's a pretty big first trip away from home, away from Southern California, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been away before, but not that length of time, yeah. Certainly. So, you know, I can't say it was a food or altitude.
Did you get to go to the opening ceremonies?
Yeah, that was incredible. I remember we had to line up before the before marching into the stadium, and we must have. I mean, it seemed like just hours and hours outside, and trying to organize Olympic athletes is like trying to herd cats. I mean, you know, it was just mass chaos, and somehow when you're walking into the stadium, it looked organized, because I remember watching on TV and just thinking, wow, I really didn't believe that was going to happen. And then I remember just being in awe. Walking around the stadium was just awesome. And, you know, all the USA flags were out, and just feeling such a sense of pride and accomplishment, and just, again, being in awe that I was a part of this this group. And then I remember standing on the field, because you have to stand for several hours on the field itself after you march around. Mm-hmm. And I remember they had this perception of a 15-year-old. They had doves or pigeons that had been cooped up for hours all around the stadium. And then once all the speeches and all were done, then we announced these games to be open, and they let all the birds out. Mm-hmm. And well, those pigeons had to go. And I remember there was an athlete in front of me with a big afro. And the next thing I know, a big splat of bird poop in her hair. And I remember around me, several people got shit on. I have to quote me on that one. But I remember, because I tell that story, and people go, oh, yeah, well, nice perception of a 15-year-old. I go, well, I do remember that very clearly. That's kind of funny.
No, I've heard from some Olympic athletes through the years that that's actually a good luck sign, that you'll medal if you get distinction.
Oh, really?
That's just what I've heard.
Oh, really? Well, unfortunately, I didn't get hit, so.
Did you get hit in 72?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, that debunks that
little
superstition.
Remember, I didn't see any of that happening, and I didn't remember, bird shit in 72. But I remember then after it was out, we had on these, like a patent leather shoes with Olympic rings on them. Mm-hmm. And I remember that they were really bothering my feet, and of course, as a swimmer, you weren't used to wearing, we wore a lot of flip-flops. It wasn't like we were in track field and always wearing shoes or whatnot. And I remember a couple of us we said, God, shoes are horrible, and people were kept saying, can I have your pin? Can I have this? So we heaved our shoes once we got outside of the arena. into the stands or into the crowd,
mm-hmm.
and people were going crazy.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, I mean, it's just kind of a silly thing to do, but we were glad to be rid of them.
Much better to have Olympic flip flops, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, as a swimmer.
Yeah, I had my own. Yeah, but they didn't even give us the Olympic flip flops. I brought my own.
Any other memories of the opening ceremonies?
No, it's just an unbelievable feeling to be there and be down on the field and looking up in the stands at in numbers of people that were in the stands and the different flags representative of all the countries of the world, and this was like a total wow. I mean, I'd watched it on TV before,
mm-hmm.
but to experience it in person was just awesome.
Did you feel welcome? Did you feel like the USA had a lot of support?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was just huge cheers when we walked in, and felt totally like the USA probably had more support than, well, except for Mexico. But, I mean, the cheers were incredible.
That's great. Okay, as you were preparing for your event and everything else, how did the venue strike you? Did you practice and compete in the same pools?
We did. It seems to me we had, now my recollection's a little foggy. It seems to me there was, you know, we had alternative facilities to compete in because not everybody could be swimming in the main competition pool all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being impressed by the facility. But then when I got to 72, it was like that. Now that was like a wow me. That was, I thought, much more impressive than 68.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was certainly more impressive than the accommodation.
Right. Oh well. Yeah. Where you're just basically in an open floor dorm. Yeah. when you guys were training, did you bond with any of your teammates really well by this time? Or,
well, I think during training camp, I mean, Vicky King was my roommate, and I remember Janie Barkman was just really a great person. She was a few years older, but you know, she was always friendly with me, and Debbie Meyer, who was sort of the star of the 68 team, everybody was friendly, everybody was nice, and you know, was a good person,
mm-hmm.
and encouraging, and optimistic, and very supportive.
That's great. And you were one of the younger ones. I mean, even the older ones weren't that older than you, it seemed.
No, but still, I think just I was maybe younger, certainly. I don't know if I was certainly one of the younger, if not youngest ones.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of my international experience, I was certainly the youngest.
Do you think that played a role? Were you intimidated?
I don't know that I think there's a difference. To me, there's a little bit difference between being in awe that I'm there and being intimidated. No, I just think that I was away too long for me to really perform at my best.
Sure. Besides like the massacres, there's a couple other things that the 68 Olympics were known for. One was gender verification. That was the very first games that they did that.
I remember that, and I remember thinking how hilarious that was that they're going to do a sex test on us, and that's what we refer to it as, a sex test, not. And I just remember when we heard about it, I mean, that sounds so invasive, but it was simply a swab from your cheek, and that determines your sex.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a big deal, and not to digress, but then I remember having it in 72, and they had decided to pull a hair out of your head,
mm-hmm.
and that would be, they could use that as a determining factor. And I remember they had a hard time with the swimmers because their hair is so damaged and breaks off that it's hard to get, you know, a good root.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was. I do remember that, and remember thinking. I just thought it was kind of an interesting thing for us to be doing, and thinking that it was such a minute deal to be having my cheek swabbed so that they could identify if I was male or female. Kind of got a kick out of it.
I bet. At 15, I imagine what an interesting perspective. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you have any interactions with swimmers from other athletes from other countries, namely like the Soviet bloc?
I remember there was a couple. One of the Russian breaststrokers was, sort of a dominant force, but I don't really remember having any interaction with them.
Mm-hmm.
During my 68 year,
right?
I really don't. I was aware of them, and I know that was the first Olympics that they were really there in a big way. But I don't remember having conversations or certainly going out of my way to try and engage in any kind of, you know, conversation with them.
Mm-hmm. Did you venture out of the Olympic Village at all before your events or anything else? Or did you go to any of the other athletic events?
I did go to some of it. In fact, I was there at the track and field when they did the Black Power salute.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about that.
I was just thought I need to go to some events, and I think that was right at, I want to say that was near the end of the games as well, and somebody said, hey, do you want to go to track and field? We have some complimentary tickets or whatever. Sure, I'll do that. I haven't, really done a lot with other events, so I went, and I remember seeing them put up their, their arms with the black, whatever it was on
the glove,
there.
They just had black gloves.
Yeah, just the glove.
Mm-hmm.
But not really knowing then exactly what it meant. Because everybody said, oh, it's a black power thing. And then it came out later, it's more of a human right to loot. But I was aware of it. And then the fact that the Australian that was involved too was, did it. I thought, well, I don't think it's a black power deal because he's obviously a part of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think until later, I really didn't get the whole gist of it till I read it in the paper. Nor did probably most people there because we didn't know what they were thinking. We didn't know what they're, didn't really know what they meant by it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So has your perception over time changed, obviously, from something that is like, oh, what are they doing to...
Well, I mean, and reading about it later, it seems that it's meant to be more of a human rights salute rather than just, a black power type of thing. And I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's fine, absolutely.
Yeah.
What about testing for, like, banned substances or performance enhancers and anything like that?
I don't even remember them really talking about it until I remember it in 72, but not in 68.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really remember that being an issue. Now, they may have had a meeting on it, and I just forgot, but I wasn't paying attention. But I don't really recall that being an issue.
Right. Do you remember, so you don't recall any rumors or anything else, or actually the disqualification of a Swedish pentathlete?
I was aware there that there were some disqualifications, but in regard to our own team being told about what we could or couldn't eat or drink, I really don't have that recollection that I did have it in 72. But in 68, I don't remember that being a factor. Anybody saying, don't do this or be aware of it. But at the same time, yes, remember there were some disqualifications.
Sure. What are your memories about the media, like TV, cameras, photographers, and things like that? Was this the first time that you were really exposed to like a big media event?
Yes, it was, but then again, nobody knew who I was, so nobody. I didn't really feel like I had a lot of media swarming after me. So.
That's funny. Do you have any specific memories about any record-setting events or anything that you were at besides the track and field or anything else?
I'm trying to think. No, I remember being. Predominantly, I remember certain swimming events, but not so much outside of the pool because predominantly those were the events I went.
Right. After your trial and you didn't in your heat, you didn't obviously. You've said that it was such a long haul. You didn't make the finals for it. Did you go to the events?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Did you know Pokey Watson or Kay mm-hmm. Hall?
I knew them both. Uh huh.
Yeah. Were you happy for them? What was your impression about?
I was fine. I was happy for them. I just I was disappointed. To an extent, and my performance, but not overly so.
Are there any other memorable or interesting events or experiences for the 68 events that that you'd like to share?
I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
I remember. This is probably of no consequence, but I remember that we were staying, I think it was called the Garden Valley Inn, and it was more of an upscale motel.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day we had some sort of function with the men's team who were staying at the Broadmoor Hotel. I don't know if you're familiar with the Broadmoor Hotel, but I think it's 5-star hotel.
Yeah.
Thinking, wow, this is really cool. How come we're here? So, anyway, I do remember that, and I do remember being having all of the U.S. team going to eat in the cadet. Mess hall.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told, and again, I don't know if it was factual or not, that we were the first group of females to ever eat in the mess hall, actually, with the cadets. They put a different Olympian at each table.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when Jacqueline Kennedy went, supposedly she wanted to sit with them, and they said no, she could sit up above, and so she could look down into the mess hall, but not with them. And so, of course, I think I was of the envision that we'd have, three or four girls at each table and with the cadets, but as I recall, they only put one of us at each table. And then we also had concerns because the female swimmers, we ate more than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so, oh my God, we'll never get enough to eat. This is where I'm thinking, I'll never get enough to eat. And then when we were sitting there, they were like so formal, they did the, they pick up the fork and everything was like at angles like you.
Yeah, those are square meals.
Square meals, yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Square meals, thank you. And of course, when I was around Taurus, we were just using, I was used to just maybe forgetting all the table manners that were appropriate and just chowing down.
Mm-hmm.
So it took some concentration to make sure that I was being socially appropriate for the event. So I do remember that and being in there with all, I don't know how many cadets are there, but there was a lot of guys.
Did you get to go to the closing ceremonies?
Yes, I did.
Were you on the field or were you in the stands?
Yeah, I was on the field. Oh. And running, just kind of everything was much more casual and free flowing. And my recollection was just, you know, I was so happy to have been a part of that whole experience. And contemplating, have I had enough? Am I going to try another 4 years? And I thought, well, I'll just take it 1 year at a time. I'll just see how it goes next year, and then I'll make my determination if I want to, you know, train another 4 years. Mm-hmm. So.
And, well, I mean, we both know how the final decision turned out. So, okay, so you fly back home. What was your reception like back home?
I flew back home, and while I was away at training camp, since I hadn't yet, I was just going to be starting high school, you know, in that fall, and I was at the Olympics, so I went and got my assignments from my teachers before I went to the Olympics so that I could kind of keep up, and because I knew I wouldn't be getting back till, I want to say it was late in October. I don't know. I don't even know what the dates were of the 68 Olympics. Do you have any idea?
No, actually, I didn't. I don't have that written down.
I don't remember. I want to say we didn't.
It went till August.
No. It was like September. The events were like September, late in September or October. Yeah, it was much, much later.
Okay.
So, and so my recollection is a little bit foggy, but no. I know when I got back to school, it was several weeks and maybe even a month or more since high school started.
Wow.
And so I went, I think I had, there was a week or two left in the quarter before you got your midterm grade.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took a test in all my classes and I got A's and everything. And then my PE teacher, physical education teacher, gave me an incomplete because I hadn't participated. And I think that that's representative of how, of that thinking back in that era.
Wow.
And here I was, just started high school, was gone almost the first quarter of school at the Olympics, and I got an incomplete in PE because I hadn't participated in her gym class. So, and in retrospect, I mean, if I was then like I was now, I would have just, you know, given her my mind, but at the time I was much more, can't say introverted, but I just wasn't one to express my opinion at that point. And so anyway, then I did get an A at the semester because I was there participating. And I remember they had this presidential fitness program back then that was, I think, a fairly new program. And they said, okay, we have to see how many sit-ups you can do in a minute. And and you had to be able to touch your wing bone, you know, your scapula to the floor each time, but you'd have to come all the way down. So I remember, I'm digressing on this, and so I remember I thought, I'll show them. So I did like 96 sit-ups in a minute, and then they said, oh, I'm really sorry, I lost count. You're going to have to do it again. So I said, okay, just give me a minute, and I'll do it again. And I did 96 again. And it was just, you know, just not everyone had that mentality towards me. A lot of teachers were supportive and great, but some of them were just not supportive.
Right.
And I found that, you know, it was the era. I mean, I found that again during my high school career between Olympics of, you know, lack of support or maybe it was more lack of understanding or just not being able to, you know, view female athletes as something that was important and something that could be such a wonderful part of a girl's life with so many positive, rewarding benefits. So anyway.
Yeah. Did you get back into the pool right away, or did you take a little bit of time off?
As I recall, I took like a month or so off, and then that fall kind of probably didn't do quite as much as I had been used to, and then started hitting it hard again in January. And I think my coach focused a bit more on sprints and getting. I remember he came up with kind of a new program rather than just hit us with lots of yardage. It was more of a let's swim fast, just do a little bit, try and swim faster during the season. And that spring and April, the national championships happened to be in Long Beach, which was my hometown. So mm-hmm. that was really the first time I won a national championship, and I won. I won the 100 and 200 backstroke and set American records in both, and got the High Point Award winner at the Nationals. So that kind of set me up to be in a good position for that summer Nationals when I broke the world record for the first time.
As you reflect back, that's outstanding. As you reflect back of during the time and your first Olympic experience, who were the biggest influences, and what kept you going?
Well, I think just to go to the Olympics and be a success, regardless of who it was, I just admired the people that were there, that were able to win, that were good people, and had a great athletic career. And so I don't know that there was any one, but I think you just kind of aspire to being that athlete on the award podium. And what kept me going, I think, was the fact that I had success. And a little bit disappointing in Mexico, but hey, I made the team, so that was very exciting. So I think in the back of my head, I wanted to go to 72 and compete the next time and have another crack at it. But at the same time, I don't feel like I was ready to commit that 4 years up front.
Right.
And so I just figured I'd take it a year at a time. And so the next summer when I broke the world record, that was pretty much what was my incentive to keep going, that I like that feeling of success and feeling of, just like, hey, this is just an unbelievable feeling. It's sort of, it's almost like calming almost. It's just, hey, I achieved this, and I'm feeling really good about myself, and I like that feeling of I like that feeling.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And my coach helped motivate me as well. But I think the big thing for me is success kind of bred success. And the more I succeeded, the more I wanted to succeed.
What kind of piece of advice would you give to today's Olympic hopefuls? I mean, are you asked to speak on this a lot?
No, in fact, I haven't really talked about a lot of these things for a long time. So
that's awesome.
Making me rack my memory bank here and, try and put in perspective, my feelings back then. So it's kind of good. One of my neighbors is Jessica Hardy, who made the team this time. Her mom and stepdad are live down the canal from me, and so I know Jessica well, and I went to the Olympic trials. So I mean, I look at her, and she went through all that drug doping thing, and it was proven that it was in her supplement that she took. But anyway, she did make the team in two events, and will probably swim two relays. So it's been really, really kind of a neat thing to be able to watch her perform and watch her grow as a person and as an athlete, and then to see her finally make the Olympic team, a week or so ago in Omaha I was happy to be a part of that, be able to experience that with her.
Absolutely.
But in terms of, and people go, oh, you helped Jessica. I go, Jessica doesn't need any help, trust me. she's just has that that attitude where she has been through so much and she just focused on here's my goal, and I got to make this to make up for what I did miss.
Sure. What kind of advice would you give to others that you don't have direct contact with?
Well, I think the one thing that I always say is you have to dream big.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, I remember when I was 10, my coach had Don DiVerona, who was, 60-64 Olympian, come and speak to our team. And I thought, wow, she seems so cool. She seems so down to earth. She just seems so normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I always had this vision of Olympians as being different or just not like normal, not like, everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember seeing her speak, and I thought, God, that would be really cool. I'd like to do that. And so I remember going home and telling my dad, I go, yeah, I want to make the Olympic team someday. And he was like, okay, that's great. That's really good. And and I don't think that they believed that I would, but, they weren't one to try and stifle a dream. And then when I made it in 68, I was shocked. But I think I'm rambling now.
No, you're
not. The point of the matter was, is I think you have to dream big because
right.
I dreamed about it, but never really felt that I was that special or that great of an athlete to actually make it until I did.
Right.
So you got to keep the faith. You got to keep motivated. You got to focus on your goal, and you never know what's going to happen.
Right. In your opinion, what effect did the 68 games have on the world? Do you have any recollections now? I mean, obviously, as a 15-year-old, you would have a different recollection. But looking back now, do you think the 68 Olympic Games were monumental in the world?
Very honestly, I wouldn't have an answer to that. I mean, they were monumental to me, and in my world, I'm sure they were, because of the some of the things that happened, just like you mentioned, the force of the Soviet Union coming in, the black power, the sex testing, the altitude. It was a continued emergence of all the athletes, but I don't know, at that time, I don't think I even felt or thought about it.
Sure. Do you keep in contact with any teammates or anything else through the years?
Well, I don't always do a good job of keeping in touch, but ironically, they just had, at the Olympic trials in Omaha,
mm-hmm.
they had a reunion for the 72 team, and so there were a number of 68, they have all, it's the 72 team reunion and alumni, and so there was a number of athletes there from the 1968 team,
mm-hmm.
One of whom was Janie Barkman, who I keep in touch with occasionally, and there was a number of people, John Kinsella, who I in touch with, Debbie Meyer, her seats were right in front of mine, so I was able to visit with her quite a bit. So it was just fun to see those people and see what their life's like now and how they're doing, so it was timely that you asked that, because I don't always see them, and I didn't go to the 68 reunion, which was at the trials in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
I remember what I was doing, but
you were doing life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, I was doing life. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk a little bit about your 72 recollections. So obviously, you came through this, and you won a couple of national competitions afterwards in between 62. Let's compare the differences between Mexico City and Munich.
Well, I think the big difference was I was a much more confident swimmer. I had international experience. I won every national championship between 69 and up until the Olympics, I was, expected to make the Olympic team. I think in the eyes of other people, whereas before I was, strictly a dark horse. You knew more what to expect. You knew more what to not expect in yourself and expect in your competitors and expect when you're traveling. It was a whole world of maturity between 15 and 19.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What are the major differences in the games of your recollections? Was it as special? Was the the opening ceremonies, things like that? Obviously, you weren't just happy to be there. It was a little different dynamic.
Yeah, I think making the 68 team was probably the most exciting thing in my Olympic career or my swimming career, whereas making the 72 team wasn't as exciting because it was more of an expectation versus a shocking moment. But I think there was much more appreciation for being on the 72 team because I valued being there more and I had worked longer and harder and I just I felt like I should be there. To me, Munich was just a great place to be, and I knew international swimmers then. I knew people on the team, different relationships, closer relationships. So it just made the whole experience, plus 4 years of life made me much more aware and much more tuned into what was going on rather than being in oblivion and awe from 68.
Absolutely. Well, going from 15 to 19 is a big change anyway.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it was more like 10 years in terms of my swimming. How I grew. Mm-hmm. My maturity level was huge.
Yeah.
More than I think just the 4 years.
Absolutely. That tends to happen.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else that you want to talk to us about?
I don't really think of anything. You're just, kind of jarring my memory bank now. I can't really think of anything, but if there's something else that you want to remember later, you can always call me.
Oh, absolutely. And you can always amend this. Our technology is kind of limited in the editing the recording, but if you want to amend or add anything, because we're gonna hopefully make this a public record, all these interviews that we're doing. So if you ever want to add to anything, you let us know, and we'd be happy to add anything if you think of something that you would like to add.
Yeah, I don't know if you're just going to, cut out a few things or how it's working. Mm-hmm. Are you just going to cut out a few of the highlights from this?
No, actually, they're gonna actually transcribe the whole conversation.
Broad.
Yeah,
man,
absolutely.
That's scary. So no. You're not even going to be able to edit what I said?
No, you're fine. you did great. I've been smiling and taking notes the whole time.
No, I thought you, because you're welcome to fix anything, but I guess if you want to, when you're redoing it, if you want to fix something, more than welcome to make any corrections or make things sound more accurately stated than my.
I think you did great.
My 15-year-old perception.
I think you did great. Do you have any questions for me? Anything that I can I can.
So what are you? You're a graduate student working in the area of.
Yeah, hang on. Let me go ahead and close off the interview, and that
okay.
then you and I can talk for
you.
A couple minutes. Yeah, I want to thank you, Susie, so much for being so generous with your time and recollecting all these memories that we put you to. So I want to thank you so much.
Okay, you're quite welcome.
All right.